Welcome to the Inside NU podcast. Gordon Voigt here alongside Kevin Trahan of Inside NU and Jonah Rosenblum of the Sun-Times Media Group. Got a lot on the table for today. Big Ten tournament action. It's followed by a spring football update. Then we'll dive right into men's tennis. We have our resident Olympic sport expert, Jonah Rosenblum, in the house tonight. So we'll go into men's tennis and then, of course, the rundown here. But first, guys, I want to start off with the men's basketball team getting a lot of national media attention right now. Locally, though, NU Hoops Bird Humor became one of the big trends this weekend. We saw parody names like Quail Abrahamson. We had Bill Cassowary. One of my favorites, Crane Coulter. What was your favorite, guys?
I like James Montgomery the Bird from Roger Sherman is Sippin' on Purple, in case he listens to this. So.
Always nice to give a shout-out. I'll say this. I am one of the – I mean, anyone who follows my Twitter will have been sorely disappointed over the last year. I know nothing about – this is the first time hearing about it. It sounds fantastic.
Check it out. Hashtag NU Hoops Bird Humor.
Well, I mean, I just recently learned about the site a week ago, this whole trend of, like, and I hate to be inappropriate to our young viewers out there, but, like, at Purdue Boobs, at Northwestern. Like, so I'm a Twitter newbie. I'm learning things every day and – getting progressively more frightened by the world. So.
Never know what you're going to find on Twitter. Let's go into the subject of all these tweets. The Northwestern basketball team, obviously a 71-61 loss to Michigan State. They played them close, hung around in that game, just a couple guns shy of competing in earnest against that. Northwestern has a history a little bit in the Bill Carmody era of winning. They took one in 2009 on the strength of Kevin Coble's 31 points. Michigan State was a top 10 team at that time, so big win there. Obviously, it didn't happen this time, but there were some highlights, guys. We had Alex Ola had 10-4 on 4-of-6 shooting, so an efficient day for him. Cale Abrahamson continues to play really well now that his minutes have increased. 6-of-11 shooting, 4 rebounds. I think 0 turnovers might be the thing that I was most impressed with him on there. Alex Marchulia, obviously 11 points after his career high 22 in that 66-59 loss to Penn State. 3 steals again for Marcatilio, so a big couple of games. Among those names, guys, there were a couple of sore spots, too. Mike Turner and Dave Sobolewski probably would like to forget this game. What stood out to you the most about this pair of games?
Well, first of all, I mean, it was good that you mentioned Alex Ola because he, I like watching him play. I mean, I think he does have certain instincts that past post players didn't, and I like seeing him box out. I thought, I like seeing him box out even on free throws, just simple plays like that, making things that in the past would have been a jump ball. For Northwestern, the ball bouncing in the air and everyone trying to touch it. And Ola, like, actually establishing control down there. And I like seeing that little hook move. I think it was, like, maybe 2 minutes into the first half and seeing him really kind of go with a nice little nifty hook to the right side.
He's got increasing confidence with that move, I'd say, for sure.
Yeah, he's kind of, like, developing a little bit of an assortment of post moves. And that's nice to see. I'm trying to really think. I mean, I completely agree with you. Mike Turner is just a really weak interior defender. And I just remember, like, one play, I think it was Knicks, and Knicks just kind of puts his shoulder into him. And, Turner, like, falls back 3 steps. And you just can't do that in the Big Ten. I mean, obviously, Knicks is a big boy, and he's, he pushes around a lot of people. But Turner is soft inside, and that's, I mean, I hope, he's a sophomore, and you wonder if he'll bulk up, but hasn't happened yet.
9 minutes from Mike Turner. Obviously, got the quick hook there. He was 1-for-1, but he did have a foul there in that short amount of time. Kevin, what did you see from Mike Turner, and has he gone up or down since the mass exodus of the bench?
Well, Turner, I think that they've got, like, Michigan State's a big team, and so Turner, he's a 4, and next year he's going to move back to a 4, because, I mean, he's just not big enough to compete against inside. And when you have Ola playing as well as he did, I think that's something Northwestern fans have to be really happy with. He was progressing really well, played well against Michigan, Minnesota, and then he got hurt against Iowa. I figured, maybe that's going to hurt his confidence a little bit. But now, I mean, he's had some really good post moves. He was better than Amir Williams against Ohio State. And he poses up to Sean Thomas, which is hard to do. I mean, Sean Thomas, the first team All-Big Ten guy, he played really well against Michigan City. He showed really good post moves. He even dunked the ball, which, shouldn't be surprising from a 7-footer, but it is. And he went up really, really strong. Earlier in the year, he wasn't going up strong enough, and he was losing the ball. And so now he's going up strong. He's either getting fouled or he's making the shots. And I think it was really, really encouraging for Northwestern fans. to see that, because I mean, next year, if you'd think that he's going to continue to improve, he still has to work in the defense a lot, but I think that that was something that was really encouraging. And yeah, Mike Turner didn't do that well, but Mike Turner's not a true five. And with Ola playing like he did then and presumably improving, he's not going to have to play like a five. So.
Also,
here's a question, though. If he's not going to be the five, does that mean that you see Ola and Turner in at the same time? Because, I mean, that's sort of what that's the implication of him not playing at the five.
I mean, no, I don't think he'll be a backup at the four. I think your fours next year are going to be, it's going to be Crawford and then Kale, who actually, Kale has struggled most of this year, and he was supposed to be a good spot-up shooter, and he was bad at that for a while. And I've always said, you know, you have three-point shooting threats, or three-point specialists who are bad at three-point shooting. There's so many of them. I don't understand. But Kale, he improved in that. He's also really improved. He was very, very active down low. He was active on the boards. Against Ohio State, he had like 9 offensive rebounds. He was active again against Michigan State, and he could prove he could drive against Michigan State. So I think that those, I mean, Crawford obviously would be your starter, but it'll be nice for Northwestern to have a backup at the four with Kale. And it's going to be tough for Turner to see the floor unless he can improve a lot in this game.
Well, I just don't think it's like, I mean, you put in the big four and five if you want to control the boards, and I'm not sure Mike Turner has shown the ability to control the boards yet. But right. I think if there's one way I want to switch the conversation to, I mean, Kevin wrote a nice piece, you know, talking about Reggie Hearn and, you know, what a career he had, even though it obviously didn't end in the best of ways. But, you know, I mean, also, Alex Marcutulo, give him credit. And I have to, you know.
Great couple of games.
And I have to admit I was wrong about him. I mean, I've derided him as a one-dimensional player. And I think, I mean, to some extent I am right. I mean, I don't think he can't really drive.
I don't think he'd argue with that.
He's a three-point shooter. But, you know, he does play pretty persistent defense. And I'll give him credit. He's done his job on the floor. And, you know, I think 2 years ago, the thing with Marcutulo is he'd get four fouls. You know, he'd play for 10 minutes and he'd rack up like three quick fouls and suddenly he'd have to go back to the bench. And Marcutulo, I think, has become a smarter defender, and he's shooting threes at an unbelievable clip. I mean, he was 3 out of 8, and then I think against that Penn State, it was like 5 out of 9 or something like that. I mean, he's not just making a lot of three-pointers, but he's doing it at a good clip. I'll give him credit. I mean, I think he still is somewhat of a one-dimensional player, but you talk about a guy who got the most out of his talent, and, you know, it's nice to see. It's nice to see, and, I mean, congratulations to him for ending his career on the right note.
He definitely improved the second half of the season on offense, but people do overlook his defense. I mean, he cannot defend against the drive whatsoever. But, I mean, that's not his game. You know, he's actually a very good on-ball defender, yep. Which is why he works so well at the top of the 1-3-1. I mean, if you had Gershon Cobb, who's a good on-ball defender, and you're defending him against the drive, Marcutulo wouldn't be seeing a lot of time at the top of the 1-3-1. He'd be the backup. But he played well in that role this year. That's why they were able to beat Minnesota. That's why they were able to beat Illinois, you know. And, I think that's one thing. I mean, yeah, he didn't shoot that well most of the year. He has later on. But that being a good on-ball defender is really something that I don't know, a part that people overlook, that he actually contributed a lot to this team.
And it's unfortunate. I mean, you know, in past, I mean, Northwestern just doesn't have an on-ball defender right now, I'd argue. And so it's hard. I mean, Reggie's okay, but Reggie gets beat off the dribble, too. And, you know, Sobo gets beat off the dribble, and he's small anyway, so it's easy to get by him. Yeah, it's interesting because like, it's hard. I mean, Marcutulo, he actually does pretty well at his role at the top at a 1-3-1, and you wonder with a guy like Gershon Cobb to back him up and, like, provide that guard defense that you want on ball. It would be a different story. So I think that's a good point.
We have to remember that, you know, I keep harping on the fact Sobolewski is playing out of his role. You know, there's a lot of guys that are not playing in the role that they're most ideally suited for.
Exactly. Tommy said, he's like, well, these freshmen, I mean, you look at Kale, yeah, he's struggled, but, like, you shouldn't expect him to do well having go into a major role. Like, if you give him time to develop, then in playing just a few minutes a game or whatever, then maybe he could show this improvement every game. You know?
Yeah, Ola and Mike Turner are a 5-star recruit combined. So, I mean, we just have to remember, they're both in their first year of competition in the top conference in the world for universities, and all of a sudden they're supposed to be a 15-10 guy. Like, I think there's this expectation that they were going to produce where it's like, Turner was a 2-star, Ola was a lightly recruited 3-star. So I don't really see, you know, I think they're playing beautifully for how they should at this point in their career.
Matt Gordon voice snippet brought to you by Jim Delaney himself. But, I mean, Ola's held his own. I mean, he hasn't, I don't think he's dominated anyone, but who expected that? I mean, it's just, you know, he's played well. He's played fine. He's been decent on the defensive end, decent on the offensive end. And for a freshman, that's pretty good. I mean, you know, what do you say about it?
And there's this BS I keep hearing, oh, Carmody can't, like, develop a big man, so he can't develop Alex Olah. Like, what are you talking about? Like, he's a freshman, and he's clearly developed a long way from where he was, and he's going to keep developing because, I mean, he's on an upward progression. And so I think what Carmody's done with Olah, considering the circumstances, has been outstanding. I mean, I think what Olah has done has been outstanding. You can't just have him, even Adam Woodbury, four-star recruit, probably the top. Woodbury and Hammonds were the top two freshman centers coming in, and both of them struggle a lot. I mean, Hammonds has shown flashes; he can probably do more than Olah, and so is Woodbury, especially defensively. But like, I mean, you couldn't have expected much more from Olah than what you're going to get. And people who like want expect him to come in here and be like, "Oh, Mason Plumlee," because you know Duke has academic standards. Yeah, he's a senior. Like, I don't understand that. Why would people want that?
Well, you know, the problem for him might be is just the Big Ten has really raised standards. I mean, you talk about Myers Leonard at Illinois getting off to a quick start. You talk about Cody Zeller who got off to a quick start. Solinger. I mean, it's a conference where some freshman centers, and traditionally centers are really positioned where you're more awkward and it takes longer to develop, and the guards are so mature at this level. They can come in as a freshman and excel. But, yeah, it's hard. I mean, I think it's hard for him because the Big Ten has raised the bar, but he certainly hasn't failed the class. He might not be getting an A, but he's passed.
Real quick, before we move on, I want to give some advanced metrics from Alex Marcatullio's career, compliments of KenPom.com. His steal percentage has actually waned a little bit, although his national rank has increased over time, which is really interesting. It just shows kind of the changing nature of the Big Ten. But anyway, one thing that's very, very interesting is that his turnover rate has increased in every single year. So I would love to sort of talk to him about that. It's gone up from 15 to 18 to 20 to 22%.
Well,
in each year of his career.
I think that reflects like one final word on Northwestern basketball. I mean, I do think that's the one area where Northwestern strayed, and it's not Bill Carmody's fault. I mean, it's a result of injuries. But if you talk about the, you know, areas where Northwestern is usually sound, I mean, one of them is avoiding turnovers, and you know, and the other is when they, you know, when they're shorthanded, like, you know, stalling the clock. And I don't think they've done either particularly well this year. And of course, it's, you know, the inexperience. But you've guys like Cale Abrahamson and Trey Demps who, you know, tend to jack up a shot 5 seconds into the shot clock, which, you know, kills Northwestern because they can't run back and forth like that. And then, yeah, the turnovers. It's interesting. But that doesn't surprise me. I mean, Mark Tullio has been called on to do so much more, and the whole team has been a little sloppier than usual.
And his two-point percentage has gone up. So, I mean, I'm not suggesting that he's regressed, but I'm just saying that there's that really interesting quirk in his career where he's progressing on. Anyway, guys, let's shift into now the Big Ten tournament. This is a big deal for the conference, even though Northwestern has a very limited role in it. Let's talk about Illinois, or rather, Northwestern obviously drew Iowa in this one. The 6 seed will play the 11 seed, of course. Out of that pool, though, of those middle teams that Northwestern could have faced, so we're talking Iowa, Purdue, who got the 7 seed, Illinois, who got the 8 seed, and Minnesota, who got the 9 seed. Of that pool, who would you least like to face if you were Northwestern? Let's start off with Kevin.
Well, I said Iowa just because I think this is a really bad matchup for them. People are going to say, oh, they almost beat Michigan State, and then they regress against Iowa. Oh, my God, you know. Well, Michigan State's a better team than Iowa is, but Iowa's just the worst matchup for Northwestern because they run the floor really well, which Northwestern can't defend against, and they've actually done a really, really good job of figuring out the 1-3-1. If you watched the tape last year of Bryce Cartwright trying to figure out the 1-3-1. That's the worst I think I've ever seen a team play against it. It was just unbelievable how they couldn't get the ball across half court. Northwestern was, like, pressing, and they, like, couldn't get the ball across half court. But this year they've done a really good job of passing and getting the ball inside. And then that opens up things in the three-point line, even though Iowa doesn't shoot the three very well at all. I think it's the worst in the conference at it. But I just think this is a pretty bad matchup for Northwestern because Iowa has proven that they can play against the 1-3-1, they can get the ball inside. They use passing. I mean, they're a very good passing team. They're better than Northwestern, actually, at assists per basket. And, I mean, it's just I think that this is a pretty bad – I mean, it's just a bad matchup for Northwestern in that it's not a team that they can really defend as well as they could maybe defend against, like, Illinois, who is either hit or miss from three kind of thing, you know.
Well, with Iowa, you mentioned – I mean – yeah, obviously what you're saying in terms of like, oh, you lose to, I mean, sports fans do sometimes expect this, and it's like, oh, you lost to Michigan State by 10, thus you should beat Iowa by 5. I mean, it's the transitive property does not work in sports. It's about matchups, and I'll agree with you there. And, it's funny, I came in to this room like kind of inclined to disagree with you, but I think the one thing that Iowa's done also that kills Northwestern is the Princeton offense does not fool Iowa. I mean, it would be interesting to get a stat, actually, and I wonder if anyone keeps it, but like a stat of like how many cuts, how many, you know, free baskets Northwestern gets off of backdoor cuts.
They got a ton last year, but it's amazing what McCaffrey has done against
them. They've clamped down.
Yeah.
And they've done a better job, perhaps, I'd say, than any team in the Big Ten at shutting down Northwestern's offense. It's hard. Northwestern just is not getting those easy baskets against them. So, yeah, I think Iowa might be the hardest challenge. I mean, you look at Purdue, and Purdue's got a lot of decent players, but they don't, you know, the Boilermakers don't scare me quite as much. They're a little bit inconsistent. You know, if you can shut down DJ Bird, which Northwestern never does, they can never figure out how to spot the three-point shooter. But, you know, technically, if you can shut down Bird, you know, I think Northwestern's got a chance. You know, with Illinois can kill itself with turnovers and, like, you know, miss three-pointers. Yeah, and, you know, Minnesota is on a funk. I think Minnesota, you know, again, Minnesota's a team that they wouldn't, you know, would be okay playing. But Iowa and Aaron White has just been so good against Northwestern. He's I don't know how he does it, but he's always there. He's always where the ball is. And, yeah, I'll agree with you, Kevin. I think Iowa's the toughest task. And perhaps if they were to wish for something, you know, on their Christmas list, I'd say maybe Minnesota, just because Minnesota's in a funk.
Yeah, you know, the good news is if they can come up with a way to beat Iowa, they can beat Michigan State. And that's the next thing. I mean, Michigan State shot really, really well. And now, if Michigan State shot how they normally shoot, Northwestern actually probably would have beat them. So, I mean, if they get them in the second round, if they can somehow get past Iowa, at least they have to play Michigan, who is basically runs the floor by like Iowa, but is way more athletic and way better. So, I mean, at least they don't have to play them, I would say.
Yeah, their second round draw isn't bad at all. It really isn't. It's the first round that's...
Considering the other teams, I guess we should say.
Yeah, I mean, and you look at the way Michigan wiped the floor of Northwestern this year, and I mean, playing Michigan in a second round would have been brutal. And, you know, Northwestern is a shot at Iowa. I mean, Iowa doesn't have anyone who I think dominates their matchup against Northwestern. I mean, I think Woodbury is a slight advantage over Ola. Marble is an advantage over Sobolewski, but you're not talking any huge matchup advantages. You know, I think Iowa is just a really good fundamental team that plays strong defense. But they've got a shot against Iowa. It's going to come down to three-pointers, I assume.
One thing is Iowa's done a very good job of their four. Has done a very good job, either White or Basabi, against Northwestern. Has done a good job of getting the boards and of also White especially on the drive. And you got to find a way to defend it. Northwestern hasn't been able to defend that since Wapshire went out. And that's going to fall on Kale to have to defend White or defend Basabi in. We'll see if he can do it. He couldn't do it in the last game because Swapshire kept it close, but when he went out, they had no answer.
You could probably get your answer right there. Like, does Northwestern stand a chance? I think you could probably say, well, if Aaron White gets 10 points or more, Iowa wins. If Aaron White somehow gets kept off the boards, he doesn't get the easy bank shots and putbacks, Northwestern has a chance.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys. You brought up the Princeton offense there. I think there could be some leftover from Fran McCaffrey's days at Penn. Playing under Coach Bob Weinauer, they were a four-time Ivy League champion when he was there. I just looked this up, running the point for that Penn Quaker team. So perhaps there was some element of the Princeton offense that just makes sense to him. That's just something that comes to mind. Anyway, my team is Illinois, and you know that this pains me to do this. I'm very low on this team, even as an Illinois graduate myself.
Well, maybe that's why you're low on the team.
No, but I think that this is a very bad matchup for Northwestern. Illinois leads the conference in turnovers forced. This is at a time when Northwestern is incredibly vulnerable. We saw that, especially in the middle of the game, I thought, against Penn State when they were pressing toward the beginning, middle. I thought Northwestern just had no answers against that. Illinois' soft spot is their perimeter. Well, Northwestern can't convert from three, so that's sort of that negates itself. And then finally, the last time they played, Brandon Paul scored 8 points, and they still blew Northwestern out. They held the Wildcat starters to 8 of 36 combined. 3 of 7 was the best offensive performance in that game. So I think Illinois' defense alone is enough to smother Northwestern. So I think that, you know, I'll take my chances with a Purdue or a Minnesota or even an Iowa. I think I would not want to face Illinois.
See, I think Illinois is beatable because you mentioned that their soft spot on the defense is the perimeter. And, like,
but I just,
absolutely you're right. Northwestern's three-point shooting has been horrible of late.
Sobolewski
can't make a three-pointer for his life at this moment. Kale is shooting at a pretty low percentage, I'd say. But the only reason why I would say you want to play Illinois is because, like, the only chance Northwestern has at this point, I mean, look at it. They've, like, what, lost 8 of 9 or whatever. You know, it's been a rough stretch. But the one, you know, their only path to victory is making, like, 10 three-pointers or something like that. And, you know, if Illinois provides them a chance to do that. Uh-huh. And then on the other end, I mean, you know, Brandon Paul, you know, occasionally takes stupid shots, and that could actually give Northwestern a chance to be in it. I mean, yeah. I think Illinois is just so Jekyll and Hyde. I mean, they're not going to beat Illinois when they have their Jekyll face on, but if Illinois is, you know, Mr. Hyde today, then Northwestern could do it.
Okay, guys, we're going to push it now into the football update. We've got Kevin. He's going to give his spiel on that. He's been visiting practice. Him and Chris Johnson over at Inside Northwestern's website have been doing a very good job of keeping up on the latest. So, Kevin, what can you tell us about Fitz's crew right now?
There's not really that much to update. I mean, we already sort of went through that last time around. But I'll keep this quick. We're sort of running out of time here. But one thing I thought was interesting was Fitz was talking about how with Jimmy Hall is one of them, they like to recruit big safeties who can play linebacker for athletic safeties who can play safety. So basically, Jimmy Hall plays both safety and linebacker. It depends on the matchup. So in the Gator Bowl, he played on one of Mississippi State's receivers, and he sort of matched up with him the whole game. And so I think this is just an interesting all-around recruiting philosophy. Is Northwestern doesn't really try to recruit a guy for a position. Just Fitz changes people's positions like it's his job. Like he seriously just changes people's positions all the time. Jack Canopy was a tackle, then a super back, then a tackle. I mean, I think Dan Vitale came in as a defensive back or something like that. They recruited Damian Proby as, I don't know, something that wasn't a linebacker. It's just really interesting. They recruit the best athletes they can, and since they're already recruiting high-intelligent guys, these guys can adapt to whatever position they're supposed to play. And so I think it's interesting you see, like Drew Smith is the kind of guy, he's a really good athlete. He's a really big hitter. And so Fitz sees that. You can teach him other fundamentals, and he goes in there. Joseph Jones, the big guy who's a safety, we're going to let him bulk up for a year. He's still bulking up, and you play him at linebacker this year. Jimmy Hall, it's like, well, he's had attributes that work at safety and linebacker, so we'll play him at both. We'll make him hybrid. And I just think that's a really interesting philosophy and you see with the offensive players too, obviously with Mark, who is a slot receiver / running back. Stephen Buckley's going to be that. He was a quarterback in high school. And
or Kane Coulter, who, yeah. I mean, was recruited as an athlete, and a lot of mm-hmm. schools wouldn't play him at quarterback, and Fitz said, well, you know, he can run, so.
Exactly. It's a really, I think, an interesting philosophy. That's the way the sport is trending. You see what Oregon does. You see what Northwestern does. And there's a lot of schools that if you just get a good athlete, and you can teach them to play the position. That's what Kelly Monty Hiller does for lacrosse. He's like, oh, well, you're good at sports? Okay, well, we'll make you good at lacrosse now. And I think that's a really interesting thing.
Well, that's precisely Taylor Thornton's story. I mean, yeah, I guess you can see it crossing lines at Northwestern, yeah.
And I think there's too many schools that just try to say, oh, well, we're going to recruit you as a running back, and you are going to only be a running back, when, in fact, they could actually help at a lot of different positions. I think Northwestern does a good job of tailoring their players to specific matchups, not really – making a position, like holding that position to that position, if it makes any sense.
That being said, Northwestern would love to have a pure cover corner, wouldn't they? I mean,
oh,
it's
yes,
like,
yes, yes. But I think with
these dynamic athletes are great, but just to match up with the number one wide receiver, to have a corner who can just stick on him like glue, that would be, you know.
Well, that's what he said. He's also, we want athletic safeties who play safeties. So Travion Henry was a safety and will be a safety. Ibrahim Kemble was a running back coming out of high school. But, you know, he's a safety, and he's always played there. But it's also nice to have these flex guys who can do both roles for you.
How about this, guys? A little fun fact from the annals of Northwestern football. Chris Brown, of course, was a starter for the Tennessee Titans for a number of years, was enrolled at Northwestern, was a Northwestern football player, but Gary Barnett wanted him to play receiver, and he refused to let him play running back, and he transferred to Colorado. So there you have it. Chris
wow.
Brown could have been a Wildcat in his formative years.
Well, I started this day talking about how Dirk Nowitzki could have been a Wildcats basketball player, so there you go. I mean, missed opportunities.
All right, guys, rundown time. We got to get out of here now. I'm going to start off.
We have men's tennis.
Men's tennis. I'm so sorry. We completely ignored our point number four. Jonah, I would love to hear about the men's tennis program right now. Obviously, they've got four losses. They're ranked number 18 right now, so it's a big turnaround. For this program, they had that tough loss to Illinois a couple weeks ago. They also lost a close one to Vanderbilt. What do you like about this team right now?
Well, I like a lot about it, to be quite honest. First of all, I mean, for the fans out there, I think I know, you know, obviously the input is, you know, usually when the football team loses its bowl game, you know, you say, all right, well, we'll switch to basketball.
There's a lull.
Now, this year the football team won, and then the basketball season goes bad, and everyone's like, okay, well, let's watch lacrosse for a while, still make us feel good about ourselves. Well, lacrosse is ranked number four right now, and obviously lacrosse will be, you know, they'll be out in Stony Brook or Towson or wherever it is at the end of the season. And I'm not telling you not to watch lacrosse, but, hey, give this men's tennis team credit. And, like, you know, they're worth your time because, I mean, you look at the high ranking and that's impressive, but what if I were to tell you that they're ranked number 18 in the country, even though they don't have a single player ranked, because there's individual rankings, of course, in tennis, too.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure their 50? Highest...
Through 50? What's the... I forget the individual ranking limit.
No, it goes pretty high. It goes into the hundreds.
Hundreds, okay.
And their highest, I think, individual athlete is Spencer Wolfe, the number 120th, the 120th best singles player in the country. I mean, they don't have a star player. And, you know, Northwestern does not necessarily do well at the number one spot, but they're just so deep, and their five and six players are talented, and you just get the sense that anyone on this lineup is capable of eventually moving to the top. And, you know, the funny thing is last year they turned it around. I mean, I remember when I covered the team 2 or 3 years ago, I think they went 1-9 in the Big Ten. And last year they finally turned it around. They went, I think, 6-3 or something like that, probably a little better than that. But last year they made the NCAA tournament, and, you know, you wondered if it was a fluke. But this year, I mean, it's been phenomenal. And you look, and especially I would point out Siddharth Balaji. I hope I pronounced his name right, but that's a name to keep your eye out for because he's really you know, as soon as I saw him, he's got just one of the most talented games on the team. I mean, his ground strokes are beautiful. He puts a lot of power on the ball. He was pretty inconsistent those first couple of years, and now as a senior, he's just put his game together. And I don't know what his record is right now. I think it's like 16-3. I just looked it up, but I mean, man, he's had a season to watch, and this whole team. I mean, really, really impressive. You know, they're just such a deep team, and they from 1 to 6, they've got a bunch of guys who can win a match and. They're strolling through the Big Ten right now, and they beat Iowa 7-0 this weekend, Nebraska 5-2. It's fun to watch, and it's a team worth your time.
All right. Thank you very much, Jonah. Next week, we will have our big, big Big Ten baseball preview, so stay tuned for that. Really looking forward.
Big Ten,
exactly. And I meant like a 1 and then a G.
D1G.
Exactly, yeah. D1G.
Oh, and by the way, believe it or not, I found some records here. In terms of Siddharth, I was actually close, which I'm surprised by, 13-4 at the number 3 spot for Northwestern, and I think this is a guy that usually finishes 500 for them. Raleigh Smith is 20-4, 15-3 in dual play. I mean, they just have a bunch of guys who, you know, are faring well, especially at the lower end of that lineup.
Fun fact to end this round, I love fun facts. Todd Martin, Northwestern alumnus, actually he only went there for 2 years, but we'll call him an honorary alumnus, lost the final of the U.S. Open to Andre Agassi in 1999. So that's the precedent for success in Northwestern. Maybe we can build something.
When was Todd Martin here? Was that in 90? Because like the last time they won the Big Ten championship was 1990. Was Martin involved in that or?
1988 through 1990.
There you go.
All right.
This will be their first time since. So.
Todd Martin, if you're listening to this, we would love to hear from you.
Todd Martin, Roger Sherman. Those have been our two shout-outs today. So.
All right.
I wonder who would win if we put him on a tennis court.
And with Kevin Drahan in there, does he play tennis?
No.
No, he's not playing tennis.
If you put him with Todd Martin, I'll go with Roger Sherman.
I kind of like Chris Johnson in a tennis match. I picture him like kind of like the Mario of, like, you know, Mario Party, like where he's an all-around. He's got
Mario Tennis.
Yeah, and Mario Tennis. Yeah, I know. But I just mean in terms of, like, a well-rounded, like, he's got good quicks, but he's, like, also a smart, crafty guy, but he's got decent power for his size.
You've got a taller build. You could be like a Waluigi.
Yeah, like a Waluigi. All right, guys. Rundown time. I'm going to start off Penn State basketball. I know this is a crazy direction to take this, but I got a chance to call the game this past Thursday. Northwestern, of course, lost that game, although it was a big, big game for Alex Marcatilio. I like the future of this program. I think Pat Chambers is a really scrappy coach who players are really going to like playing for. I think DJ Newbell, the transfer from Southern Mississippi, has a really bright future in this conference. Him and Jermaine Marshall, who's a pretty sneaky wing, both got named honorable mention all Big Ten today. So they've got a couple good building blocks there. Tim Frazier's coming back. Donovan Jack, who's a sort of a 6'9 jumping jack, kind of in that mold, the former volleyball player. And I think he's going to have a bright future in the Big Ten too. So they have some pieces. One thing that's really interesting, Brandon Taylor is a 4-star wing out of Philadelphia who committed to the program and then Brandon Austin committed to the program and then decommitted and went to Providence, but I've seen his highlight tape. He's an electric player who's going to be a big piece for Providence. Anyway, Penn State, I like their future. They've got a long way to go, but in the next couple of years you could see them at kind of the Purdue-Iowa level those programs are right now.
My contributions to the rundown, I'll go to Northwestern women's basketball. Their season ended, I guess, a couple days ago with a second loss to Iowa in 5 days or something like that. It'll be really interesting to watch this team. For all the attention that's being put on Carmody, I mean, Joe McCuen has now been here, what, 4 years or so, 4 or 5 years, really high expectations. Thus far, all they've done is make it to a WNIT. Will be really interesting to see what direction this team is heading. I really can't tell. I think with most teams you can say, like, oh, well, they only have, you know, they only graduate one senior, so they're going to come back better than ever. Or you can say, oh, they lost half their starting lineup. Northwestern women's basketball, right in between. I don't know what to make of, you know, what they're going to be like next year. You know, Kendall Hackney and Daniel Diamant, obviously, two of their better post threats. But at the same time, I mean, Maggie Lyon was the Big Ten freshman of the year. You have Lauren Douglas, who's a pretty good contributor. Alex Cohen is a good contributor. And Carly Roser is an awfully good point guard who can drive to the hole. So you wonder. I like Carly Roser. I really like Carly Roser.
She picked it up at the end of the year, didn't she?
I think she did. She had a bunch of assists. And, I mean, she can drive. And that's always one of the big differentiating things I've noticed in women's basketball. It's just, you know, that's what separates, you know, the good point guards out there. So it'll be really interesting to see. I don't know where this program is going. I don't know how much pressure is on Joe McCuen at this point. But it'll be really interesting to see where next year's team goes because, you know, obviously they lose two of their best scorers in Hackney and Diamant. And it's been pretty disappointing around there of late. It'll be interesting to see what that nucleus can do. I mean, they've got 4/5 of their starting lineup returning, I guess. I mean, Hackney and Diamant would be – the math doesn't work out, but they've got four – the point is they've got four of their biggest contributors returning. One of them must have been a bench player. We'll see where this program heads. It could go in two wildly different directions.
And mine's significantly shorter, but mine is this Jason Welch. He won Big Ten Wrestling Championship, and I think NCAAs are in 2 weeks, so we'll see how that goes. Northwestern actually has a pretty good wrestling program. I mean, Big Ten's probably better at wrestling than it is at basketball, if you look comparatively to other conferences. He won the wrestling championship, so congrats to him. And
good for him. He was seated lower than usual, wasn't he? I think he was seated third or fourth or something like that. And in the past, he's gone in second. He actually came. I think he was a bit of an underdog in this year's event and came out to win it.
Well, anyways, he did well. And also a funny story I thought was Matt McDonough from Iowa. He's nationally ranked wrestler. He's very good. And the last 2 years, he's won the Big Ten championships. But this year he got second, and apparently it was in Champaign at Assembly Hall, and apparently the workers found his second place medal in the trash afterwards. So he was not too pleased with that. I don't know. Tom Brand's probably like, no, we only get first place here. But no, so too bad for Matt McDonough. Bad day for Matt McDonough, but good day for Jason Welch. So good for Jason Welch.
Well, I hear Jason also tossed his medal in the trash, and he said, I only keep gold medals on my desk, so...
The question is, does Jonah Rosenblum keep silver medals?
I give them to charity.
Thank you very much. 8 Big Ten teams are ranked, and 10 are receiving more than a dozen votes. That's astonishing.
You're like the inside in you stats guy.
I like going to the nitty gritty. It's fun.
But minus the Tony Reale beard. You don't have the facial hair going.
All right, we have podcasts of a six. Blackest Stone. I just can't do the New York accent. Jonah, maybe you'd be able to help me out there.
I haven't been there in a long... I'll get it back. I was there last... I just don't have the feeling.
The Midwest
accent
is creeping in on Jonah Rosenblum.
Accent? Like Chicago accent?
I've been accused, actually.
Accent, you guys?
Well, apparently I say this and that. I say this and that a lot, apparently, so this has been bad. I mean,
this and that? Is that a Midwest thing?
I certainly didn't say it in New York. I would have...
What is it?
Beat
this
up.
And that?
I don't,
wait. I'm
you know, this, you know, all the donuts and the coffee and this and that, you know, whatever.
I was not familiar with that. I've lived here.
This and that, yeah.
So if you want a good article to make fun of the Midwest, The Onion had a fantastic piece on Iowa having its fashion week, and it was extremely accurate, which is kind of sad, but it was kind of hilarious. Anyways. But
were overalls included, or?
No, just basically what I wear, which is not good. So, you know.
Well,
you are wearing some nice Carhartt boots right now. I was admiring the quality when we were waiting for Jonah when he was on that call. This is some great boots you have going here. I mean,
well, the song
people here always wear those Timberlands or whatever, which is fine, but they wear them ironically, which pisses me off because back home people wear them because you know they're good boots. So no, Carhartt boots are definitely something we need more on Northwestern's campus.
And there's nothing wrong with the T-shirt look, by the way. I mean, this is as thrift shop. You know, that song, whatever that thrift shop song. That's it. It's a tongue twister. But, hey, why spend, you know, thousands of dollars on clothes, you know? Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a point to that.
Inside Northwestern Podcast, moral of the story, why spend so much on clothes?
When you can get a free podcast
when
on
you can
Monday
get a
night.
Podcast on Monday. Gordon Voigt, joined by Kevin Trahan, John Rosenblum. Guys, thanks so much for tuning in. Had a lot of fun today. Hopefully we'll get Chris or Steven or Luke back next week. Anyway, tune in next week. We'll have a baseball preview. We'll talk about the Big Ten tournament. We'll have another football update. Looking forward to it, guys. Thanks so much.